Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, listeners. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Spoken. Spoken is a bit like having an English teacher in your pocket because your English teacher at Spoken will send you tasks. You'll basically do your lessons using messaging apps on your phone like WhatsApp and Viber and WeChat and Line and Facebook Messenger and more. And don't forget that Spoken are offering you a 1 hour trial, which means that you get like a 1 hour sort of trial with the service. And that's completely free. It includes also an assessment of your English skills. And if you like the service after your free 1 hour, you can then get 20% off the first month of any of their course packages. Or you can just go away and do something else, like eat a biscuit if you want, because there are no strings attached. You could do other things. It's not just biscuits. You could just do whatever, you know, just do something else. The point is, you get the 1 hour is free, and then you can choose to buy one of their courses with a 20% discount or not. Right? It's cool. No strings attached. To get that offer and for more information, go to getspoken.com/LEP or click a Spoken logo on my website. All right? Nice one. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, hello, and hello to all listeners listening in all locations, in all countries and continents around the world. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast, right? That's the name of this podcast. This is part two of this double episode featuring Zdeněk Lukas from the Czech Republic. Zdeněk is an English teacher, a podcaster, and a board game enthusiast. In this conversation, we're learning about Zdeněk's story. In part one, which you've all listened to, of course, we heard about how Zdeněk learned English to a high level by working as a labourer, an electrical fitter on a building site in East London with a bunch of Cockneys. All right, mate. All right, Dan. What's your name? What's your name, mate? Zdeněk. Zdeněk. I'm going to call you Dan. All right. They all called him Dan because they couldn't pronounce his name. Anyway, in this episode, we continue the story by talking about these things. Coming back to the Czech Republic and becoming an English teacher. The challenge of doing the Delta, that is the notoriously difficult Cambridge Diploma in English Language Teaching to Adults, which is considered in the industry as the highest practical English language teaching qualification out there if you're teaching English to adults, English as a foreign language, the Delta. There's also my story of failing one of my teaching observations when I did the Delta in 2006. That's right, I did fail part of it. But don't worry, folks, I took the teaching observation again, and I passed it, by the way. So my record and my reputation remain intact. Also, we talk about teaching English when it's not your first language, the preconceptions, the challenges, and the possible advantages of that. And we talk about Zdeněk's podcast, his inspiration, his reasons for doing it, what he does in his episodes, and how the podcast fits in with his teaching and his life in general. There's also a slightly embarrassing story from me about some lost comedy videos that I made in the years before I started Luke's English Podcast. And finally, we have Zdeněk's interest in board games, both as a teaching tool in the ELT classroom, but also in English-speaking gaming communities online using the Steam platform. Zdeněk has, in fact, created his own board game, which he plays online using a sort of board game simulator called Tabletop Simulator. And he also hopes to get the board game properly published in physical form in the future. So those are the things that we'll be talking about in this part of the conversation. I will now stop this introduction, so you can carry on listening to me talk to Zdeněk Lukas, whose name I probably pronounced slightly wrong, but at least I don't call him Dan. All right. So having spent time in the UK gave you a big edge.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then so that helped you through the university degree, mm-hmm. which wasn't too much of a challenge, I suppose, compared to, like, you know, working on a building site in Romford. Like, just doing a master's degree is, like, you know, fairly simple in comparison. All right.
Actually, it was simpler.
Yeah. I mean, you're more comfortable. I mean, you're at home, you've got your books, and it's not like the daily challenge of, shit, you know, I've got to make sure I get all this right, otherwise I'm going to have to, they're all going to take the piss out of me mercilessly, because that's what English lads do. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, is it just English lads that take the piss? I mean, in the Czech Republic, they don't take the piss out of each other like that?
I suppose we do. It's just a little bit different, and I like it more in England. It's something like you have to get the grips with. You have to get used to it, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
First, when they took piss out of me, I was a bit like,
I got offended
a little bit, you know, and I didn't understand everything and why they were doing this to me. Even though I was trying to be nice to them, they just took the Mickey out of me on a daily basis. But then I actually learned to love it. So first I hated it, and then I learned to love it, and I started doing it to everyone else too.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay.
It's very nice. It's, you know, it's just part of the culture.
So then making the step to becoming an English teacher then. Was that a big step to take?
Well, I don't know. The biggest step it felt like it was very easy, really, after that experience in England.
Yeah.
It felt like I could do anything at that point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was such a huge achievement for me that it was, I don't want to say, like, it was really easy at the university for me. I don't know why. I was doing well, and for some reason the teachers kind of liked me too, like because there were not so many guys. That might be the reason why, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the girls they said that the teachers during the exams they would just ask me simpler questions, and, you know, yeah. even like that, they needed more guys in English teaching.
I see. So they were slightly sort of lenient on you.
Yeah, but I don't think it's true. I think, obviously, I think I was just working hard. And
who knows? You know, I guess, you know, you had this advantage of having had this very difficult and yet rewarding experience, and then you were, that was really paying off for you. And so, you know, you were just, the wind was blowing in your favor in a mm-hmm. sense. And so maybe some other people were looking at you going, how come it seems so easy for him?
Yeah.
And then they're coming up with these ideas like, yeah, it's clearly sort of some corruption in the system. Like they just want to give him let him in because they want more men in the system or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows?
That was just very nice. You know, I went to every single lecture, and, you know, the lecturers, they tend to like you more than during the exam if you do that.
Oh, yeah.
And I was active during the seminars and all that. So I think I deserved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, of course. All right. So when did you actually first step into a classroom as a teacher?
Well, that's like I said, very hard to say, because I was dabbling in teaching during my university studies. So it's hard to pinpoint it exactly. But
there must have been a moment, though, where you had some books or some papers under your arm and you were walking towards a room thinking, oh, shit, this is it.
I was working for a language school. And I don't know, I must have been like 2 years into my studies, but I don't really remember that moment at all, because I had taught some private students mm-hmm. as well. So I don't really know. Look, this memory is kind of blurred for me. So I don't know.
Okay.
But obviously this is something you have to learn to do, to be able to, like, to become confident speaking in front of others. Of course, it takes time and all that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so since then you've gone on to do other qualifications. You've got the CELTA, which is like the Cambridge certificate for teaching English to adults, mm-hmm. and I think your DELTA, which is the higher diploma in English language teaching to adults, which is a very tough qualification indeed. And mm-hmm. So I think you're like, I don't know how, what, 80% through that? Is that right? Or completely through it now?
Yeah. I still didn't do module one. Wait, module three, sorry. Module three, it's the, what's it called? It's like you have to write...
Is it the extended assignment?
It's the assignment, yeah.
When I did the Delta, they didn't do it like that. It wasn't organized into those modules, so it's different. We had just different types of assignment. But maybe it's the extended assignment, which is where you have, I think... When I did it, I had a one-to-one student, and you have to create a whole profile about this student, including, you know, absolutely every single consideration about their language learning needs, and then you would provide all of the material and a whole course with all of the justification, all the language analysis, and everything. This whole package, and it ended up being a thick pile of papers that, you know, it's a very big project involving like proper formal interviews with the student, recording them, referencing things they've said, language analysis, all that stuff. Maybe is that the thing that you
But I just didn't feel like going into it. I have to be honest with you, I got a little bit lazy and I don't want to do it anymore. I'm like, I don't really need it, you know. The most important module is the teaching itself.
Yeah.
And I passed that and I did well. So I don't really think I need to write this stupid thesis. I probably should, you know, but
it's very tough, I have to say.
I just don't want to be bothered, you know, anymore.
It's infamous. The Delta is infamous. I mean, if anyone,
I did enjoy it. It was very intense. But I did enjoy it. I don't want to speak badly of it, but it can be tough because it's 2 months of not doing anything but Delta. You like when you do the interview with them, they will even tell you you can't do anything else. You can't have beer. You can't go out with your girlfriend. You can't do anything. Yeah. You just have to study and come here for the classes.
Yeah.
The input sessions, as they called them.
Yeah.
And you have to teach lessons and sweat, basically.
That's right.
A lot.
When I did it, I was like, just before I did it, I worked my way up to it. Like a lot of my friends who also were English teachers that I'd, you know, met along the way, they had done it like a year before me, 2 years before me. And they're like, Luke, when are you going to do the Delta? You've got to do the Delta. And I was like, I don't want to do it. I'm not ready yet. And then, you know, 1 year was like, right, okay, I'm going to do it this year. And I applied. And exactly the same as you, in the interview, they were like, you know, you need to clear 2 months of your life completely. Yeah. And I was in a band at the time. And, we were quite serious. And I left the band and it was drama. There was real drama. It was like, you know, when I told the guys I was leaving, it was like serious drama. It was that's what it's like when you're in a band. It's like being in a relationship. It really is. So I, you know, I had to break up with the band, and like all the other things stopped. No one, all my friends who weren't in teaching didn't understand. Had no idea of what I was going through, which annoyed me. And
and it's nothing else. It's not the same as the university, really.
No,
it's something completely different. You can't really imagine it unless you do it yourself.
It's just the workload and the intensity. The you know, at one point you kind of look at your timetable and you think, shit, I've got 10 days. I've got 10 days of hell. You know, at its peak, where it's like 10 days where you've got observations. You also have dates when you have to hand in assignments, and it's like essays on essays on essays on lesson plans, on actual the stress, the physical stress of being observed teaching, where like literally every minute or maybe even every second has to be accounted for. Where it's like, here are the language learning aims for this minute, and here's the type of interaction, and you know all of this stuff, and if you make one mistake, if you miss out one of the little links in the chain, then poof, game over. It's like a driving test in that sense.
Yeah, there is like a snowball effect, actually, a knock-on effect, because I was actually used to like passing all my exams from the university for the reason I gave you, the teachers liked me or something like that. They thought I was the only male there, supposedly. but then when I failed my teaching practice, I failed one teaching practice at Delta.
Yeah.
I could afford to fail one, actually. But you have no idea how I felt when that happened.
Oh, I do.
And then there were other – oh, actually, you do.
Because I failed one as well, yeah.
Oh, you did? Oh,
I okay. did. I failed my externally observed teaching lesson – you know, my external observation. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
The external one.
The external observation is like the –
oh,
you
my
know,
God.
The
most
big
important one.
Yeah, it's the big one. Yeah, it's the most important one.
Oh,
and
no.
the messed up thing, right, is that I thought it was fine. I was, I really worked on it, and I was nervous. And I remember, like, the half an hour before the lesson, I was in the teacher's mm-hmm. room, and I was walking around the teacher's room with this mini cricket bat in my hands because I'd done all the work. I was ready, and I was like, I can't prepare anymore, so I'm just going to walk around with this cricket bat for half an hour. And I felt good. I was like, I was just like tapping the cricket bat in my hands, chatting to my colleagues, and they were like, "Hey, how are you?" And I was like, "I'm all right. I'm okay. I'm going to be all right." And then I went in. I taught the lesson. Everything seemed to go okay. The examiner from Cambridge was like this little old lady, and I was teaching, and I remember at one point glancing over to her, and I got the impression she just wasn't really. I don't know. I just felt like she wasn't really listening.
And did this throw you off?
Or? No, because I was like, this is all right.
Okay.
I actually feel good. Like for the first time, the first observation I've done throughout this whole process where I feel comfortable. Because all the others, I was like so horribly nervous and so nervous that like physically just so uncomfortable and sweaty and like and a ball in my stomach and like a frog in my, not a frog in my throat, like a dry mouth and all that stuff. And this one, I was like, I'm okay. I'm the cricket bat guy. I'm all right. And she didn't seem that like to care, you know, and whereas other observations with the, I was observed by our tutors.
Yeah.
And one tutor in particular could be very harsh and very strict. She was very tough. And she's famous for it, or infamous for it, that you look over at her during your observation and she will look at you with this very frightening expression on her face, like, what the hell do you think you're doing? You know, that's the general vibe that she gives you. And I remember one of the observations where she was observing me, I was like, some of the students hadn't come back to the class. They were a bit late coming back. So I was just kind of going, oh, it's okay. We'll just wait for the others to come back. And this is like 2 minutes into the time when my lesson should have begun based on my timetable that she had, you know, in her hands. Yeah. I was like, it's all right. We'll just wait a couple of minutes for the others. And I glanced over at her as if to sort of say, you know, it's all right. We'll just, you know, just wait for everyone to come in. Yeah. And she looked at me like, what are you doing? Were you going to break the English language? You know, and I was like, oh, God. And it was just horrible. But this one, everything seemed to go okay. But then the results came in months later and I'd got a job. I'd got like a good job at a good school off the back of the fact that, you know, I was probably going to pass the Delta and stuff so that I got this job in the summer.
Yeah,
and along with a few other people who had done the course with me, and so we're all the Delta gang, you know, the A team, and so our boss came in with the results, and he was, and actually I was teaching. That was it. I was teaching in my class, and he knocked on the door.
I see.
No, it was break time. That's it. It was break time. So we had break. Went downstairs. We're all in the teacher's room. The boss comes in and he's like, "I've got the results in my hand," like this. And then he took me to one side. He was like, "Luke, I'm afraid to say, very bad news." I'm like, "What is it? Has my dog died?" "No, you've just. I'm afraid you've failed the external observation." And I was like, you know, I went white as a sheet, you know.
Yeah, that's a terrible feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, the blood drained out of my face. And I had to go back in and teach my class. And I'd come out all kind of feeling good, like good teacher, confident. I went back in like deflated, like a broken man with this white face. Yeah, and they were all like, "Are you okay? You know, what's the matter?" And I was like, I've failed a thing. I've failed something. And I remember one of them at the end of the class even came up to me. This guy came up to me. And he's like, "Luke, you're a good teacher. You're a good teacher. It's going to be okay."
I was reassuringly,
like,
yeah.
And I was like, looking up at him, really? You know.
It's not going to change anything at the point. Like what mattered was that they failed you.
Yeah, I retook it. I went back into Mordor. and retook the thing.
Yeah,
and
I passed it. I had some friends or classmates to whom this happened as well. Mm. So I was actually fortunate to pass that external observation. Although I thought I did fantastically well, just as you.
Yeah.
I only passed it. I thought I would get a merit or something.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, when you were describing your experience of your boss coming into your classroom and telling you what happened, guess what it reminded me of?
Your experience of the same thing?
No.
I don't know. What?
No, my favorite episode of Luke's English Podcast, Luke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
You know what that is?
Yeah, the pink gorilla story, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what happens in that episode there?
Well, your boss comes into your classroom and fires you for a different reason, for telling your students to shut up and using Raymond Murphy's English grammar in use.
Yeah.
Just telling your students to do an exercise instead of teaching communicatively or something like that.
I had a bunch of like Italian American mafia guys in my class. They all took my side and they're like, "Hey, do you want me to?" I think they offered to kill him, right? They should have done in the story.
I think that should be a spin-off.
I think so.
Pink's Gorilla story.
Maybe we need to revisit those Italian mafia guys and
absolutely.
Could do like a spin-off series where they're involved in trying to kill my former boss and it's like a gangster story. Okay, so we've been sidetracked. We got sidetracked a little bit here. I was going to ask you about sort of challenges to being a teacher who has English as their non-native language.
Well, the thing is, I don't think there are any challenges here in my country because there are so many of my colleagues who are in exactly the same position.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose it's rather normal because you get qualified for it at university, you know, so they prepare you for it. And obviously there are challenges to being a young beginning teacher,
mm-hmm.
just like in any other job. But I wouldn't say there are any challenges in particular because you are a non-native English teacher, because you learn the language to a good level, which is ideally at least C1.
Uh-huh.
Everybody should be C1 to start teaching, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I don't think so. But I actually ended up teaching at this school in Poggibarone. I say ended up, but I'm actually quite happy to be here.
Yeah.
Which is it's called Institute for Language and Preparatory Studies, Charles University. It sounds very fancy, but essentially, it's like a school affiliated with Charles University where we teach foreigners. We prepare them for entrance exams at universities.
Yep.
So they would be around the age of 17, 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so cool about it and what I've always loved about this is that they are foreigners. So everything is in English. Like even if I teach Czech students, of course I teach in English, but there's this sense, there's this weird sense that I'm teaching my countrymen a different language, even though we speak the same language. Some sort of weirdness around, like yeah. weird aura about it. I can't explain it.
Yeah.
Whereas here at this school, it's all like kind of natural, you know, because we use the language is the only means we can really use to communicate. And this is very, very cool to be able to teach students from all over around the world.
So, sorry, let me just ask why the students from all over the world come to the university, the institute?
Well, because Charles University and universities in the Czech Republic have quite a good reputation.
Yeah.
You know, they're quite reputable, so we would get a lot of students from the Middle East, a lot of Russian-speaking students, not just from Russia, but from places like Kazakhstan, Moldova, or Ukraine, you know, all over the place. And we occasionally get some students from other places as well, like Sweden, or we get some students from the Balkans, or this year, I actually teach two native speakers, which is kind of funny. I don't even know how that is even possible, but yes.
Where are they from?
I've got one American girl and one British guy.
Yeah, I've been in that situation too.
It's very ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's kind of funny. And it's kind of cool in a way because you can...
It is cool, but it's... Yeah, I manage. I think I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
And we just have to kind of establish where we are. Like I use them. That sounds horrible.
You use them.
They help. No, I don't use them. They help me out with certain things, you know.
Yeah.
I sometimes ask them, because obviously native speakers, they have a better feel for the language.
Mm-hmm.
Although, like, the thing, the difference between a native and non-native speaker is that the native speakers know how, but they don't know why.
Yeah.
So I am there to explain why.
Mm.
And yeah. So
yeah, that's good.
It's been a lot of fun.
Some people will come to a language school to learn English,
yep.
and they have this requirement, which mm-hmm. is that I will only learn from a native English speaking teacher. You know, I can only have a native speaker as a teacher. You know, you meet some students who have this attitude, right?
Have you met anybody like that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, in my time as an English teacher, I have encountered students who've come to schools and who have, you know, prioritized having a native English speaker as a teacher.
Mm.
And that's like a priority for them, even if, you know, the maybe the teacher that they've got is not was not born in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And like, let's say the teacher they've got is not born in the UK, but is an excellent teacher with the diploma, with the master's degree, with all the experience and stuff like that. The first impression perhaps of a student like this would be like, but I need a native speaker. Right. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not saying I agree with it. I don't, because, you know, I just don't. But have you ever faced that sort of?
Well, to be honest, I haven't, because the students never respond to me like that.
Good.
But it could happen. It could happen when I'm looking for a job. That's where the discrimination is kind of palpable. So I'm looking for a job,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure, like, I get turned down countless times because of my native language. And that's what I'm not so happy about. But when it comes to the students proper, well, they're amazing. They just, I suppose it's because I enjoy this job, you know.
Yeah.
Like I'm very enthusiastic when I teach,
mm-hmm.
so I just show them that they you know, they have a teacher they can learn from and enjoy that while learning.
Yeah, this is so
what
important.
Am I trying to say here? I have no idea.
No, we all understand. We understand. I think it's so important, isn't it? Just that the teacher is involved and enthusiastic
mm-hmm.
in what they do. And it sounds like what's cool for me about what you do is that you have that level of enthusiasm for learning and for teaching, which is
absolutely
really brilliant.
Yeah.
And that must serve you in quite good stead.
It does.
Combination. Yeah,
because it's just so important for me to achieve high level of proficiency in the language. What's the phrase? The ground would swallow me. Is that a phrase?
Well, yeah, we say that you want the ground to swallow you up when you feel really ashamed.
Yeah, I would feel ashamed and embarrassed if my English level was low and if my students made fun of me because of my pronunciation or you know, so it's obviously there are challenges there. I'm not at the same level as a native speaker. That's understandable. Like, I'm not as fluent as a native speaker, let's say, and I sometimes look for the words, for the right words.
Uh-huh.
Obviously the huge challenge is for everyone, the idioms and phrasal verbs. All that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think overall it's all right.
But everyone searches for words. I search for words in English.
I know,
all
but
the time.
Like, you know, your range of vocabulary is much larger than mine, obviously.
Yeah.
And also, like, we can divide it into active vocabulary and passive vocabulary. So while I would understand, like, from the conversation we have had so far today, I understood every single thing, apart from some cultural references, maybe.
Yeah.
But every single word you've said, I know, right?
Yeah.
Passively.
Yeah.
But how many of these words would I actually say? The number would be much lower, obviously.
Mm.
So that's the difference as well.
Do you know, I mean, like, what? How do we raise the number of words, or how do we broaden our active vocabulary or grammar?
Well,
what do you think about that?
Well, obviously, you have to produce a lot. Like you have to. So as a teacher, I have to work on the productive skills, mm-hmm. especially speaking. So this is something I like to focus on a lot, actually.
Yeah.
And then it's up to every single student, really. Like as you have said many times on this podcast, the responsibility rests kind of on their shoulders, doesn't it?
It does.
But of course, we can ask the English teachers. We can make sure we prepare the activity in such a way that they have enough opportunities to practice. And you know, often what happens to some teachers is that they do a lot of theory, mm-hmm. and not enough practice.
Right.
Even I noticed that at Delta, they were kind of telling us off for that, for not giving, you know, for not allocating enough practice to students.
It can happen to diploma qualified teachers that their heads are so full of the language, yep. analysis that that blinds them to an extent sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's weird. It's like you learn all this stuff and then you have to know how to throw it away, mm-hmm. as well. That kind of thing. It's like some old kung fu master's technique. You must unlearn what you have learned, young Jedi. Yeah. What are some of the reasons why maybe even having a non-native speaker as a teacher is better? Why could it? What are some of the strengths?
I don't like this distinction, better or worse. Yeah. We are just different, and I think we are good for a different reason. Like each of us has their own benefits, and of course there are some weaknesses too. Obviously, a non-native speaker has done it. They have been through the process of learning the language, so they can empathize with the students.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they know how the students feel, and you can even say it like that to them. I know how you feel when you're learning these articles, because I was exactly in the same situation. I can even refer to some particular anecdotes,
yeah.
when I got something wrong because of learning the language, and it strikes a chord with them, you know?
Mm.
And that's cool. What else? The problem with some of the native speaker teachers is that, and I know it's not you, Luke, but mm-hmm. some of the native speakers are not well qualified to do the job,
mm-hmm.
because they think that after taking CELTA, which is like one month course, mm-hmm. it's like half baked course, you can be good at teaching. Well, you know, like it requires years of experience, and you should really be more educated than this.
Yes.
So sometimes it's unfair that these teachers get hired over really good non-native teachers, you know, and they don't even like bother finding out what these teachers can do. And that's unfair.
Yeah. And even the teachers themselves don't even realize what they lack. They think, this quick course, and mm-hmm. it's my language, and yeah, that can be kind of a dangerous combination, can't it? Like a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of experience can be a slightly dangerous thing. It's where mm-hmm. teachers can start believing that they're better than they actually are.
But obviously, there are a lot of great native speaker teachers. I hope it doesn't sound as if I'm saying.
No,
I'm just trying to explain that. Yeah, I'm just trying to say that it's more complex than like being a good teacher. It's more complex than just saying you are a native speaker and that's what makes you good. It's just not true.
Yeah,
and I actually thought this as well. You know, I thought this as well until I went to CELTA and Delta, and I could see some of the native speakers there, and I could see how they struggled with some of the classes. And it was a different kind of struggle than me, because their language is like C2, you know, they are native. So they struggled with the classroom management or with with clarifying the language or something like that.
Yeah.
So what I would like to say is like I think we complement each other very well.
Yes. Yes, and I think so.
Yeah.
There's room for diverse teaching skills and teachers who come from different experiences. But mm-hmm. Certainly, yeah, I can imagine as a non-native speaker, having learnt the language, you know, you've plotted a path through that particular forest.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can kind of take the learners by the hand and go, look, here's how we navigate through this whole thing. Because I've done it before. Exactly. I've been there, done that, and got the T-shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so, well, I think there's two more things for us to talk about. We've been going for quite a long time, but I mean, you know, we can just keep going. That's mm-hmm. fine. That's the joy of podcasting. Yeah. There is no weather report or news break that we have to go to. You know, we don't have to stop the program at any point. We can just keep going. I was going to ask you, so when did you start doing your podcast?
Okay, so that was actually next April it will have been 6 years since I started doing the Next English podcast.
All right, 6 years in April. All right.
Yeah, I think so.
And so what kind of moved you to start doing that?
Well, obviously, you were my primary inspiration, as I have said many times on my podcast. And I'm sure we've talked about it when you came onto my own podcast.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And so do you know even how I discovered your podcast?
I think you were Googling like vocabulary for feeling ill or something.
Exactly,
like that.
Yeah, to teach my class.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, oh, this is actually quite interesting. I might as well start listening to this myself.
Yeah.
And then after 1 month, I was like, oh, damn it, I need to do something like this too. I had always been like this. Look, I had always wanted to create things. And this is not my first podcast that I have attempted.
Yeah, I know.
There had been one which was like a parody. It was scripted, not successful at all. But... what I liked about this is that I was ticking a lot of boxes, killing more birds with one stone. I basically it was a lot of good speaking practice for me, mm-hmm. as well as satiating the need. Is that an expression?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. For doing something creative, which is something I always wanted to do. So.
Yeah. 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 I think before you started doing the Next English podcast, yeah, you mentioned the other project. Was it called The Heads or something?
No. The Heads is one of the first episodes of a really weird episode, by the way, of the Next English podcast.
But the other thing you did, I think I remember you telling me that you were influenced quite a lot by the Ricky Gervais podcast.
Was
Well, yeah, you mentioned before that there was something to do with Carl Pilkington.
I see. Yeah.
I think so. I think you'd probably listen to the Ricky Gervais podcast with Carl Pilkington.
Basically, what I did was that there is a famous video in the Czech Republic that has been circulating on the internet for a long time. It's a cross-country skier.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interview with him after a race. Okay. And he's really good. I'm not sure if he might have retired already. But at the time, he was really good cross-country skier, like winning races and stuff like that. And he gave an interview in English, but it was so hilarious. Like he was basically mixing up English, German, and Czech. And it became so – it went viral immediately.
Yeah.
And like everybody makes fun of this. He it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And so I did parody to that. Like it was one of the things I did on that podcast.
I see.
But it was all scripted, like, and I was even like changing voices, and it was like really bad quality. And now when I listen to it, I can't believe I even published that.
Well, you got to start somewhere, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, before I did Luke's English podcast, I was doing other things too online and. Mm-hmm. Some things were not bad, but then some things I've since looked at and gone, oh my god, what was I trying to do? There's one thing I've got to tell you about. It's just something I've got to get off my chest. So I did this. I came up with this sketch idea, which was called. It was like I was this character in a forest, like a survivalist. Mm-hmm. It's not a very original idea, but I love watching those shows on TV where it's like a guy in the forest and he's like got all these survival skills and he teaches you how to light a fire and stuff like that and how to, you know, do those things. Uh-huh. So I came up with this idea of that I would be the survivalist instructor, but I was terrible. It's not a very sophisticated idea, but, you know, I came up with these ideas like, okay, we'll do one where I'm trying to light a fire. We'll do one where I'm trying to catch a badger. and you know, all these sorts of stupid things. And so I persuaded my brother, we went to my parents' house one weekend, and they had like a garden with like a bit of like a not really woodland and trees and stuff at the bottom of the garden, and we filmed this stuff down there. And it got really crazy and weird. There was one, I decided that one of the sketches should be where I'm talking about edible mushrooms that you can eat, that you can find. And there's like one mushroom, which is like, this is the edible mushroom. It's, you know, a really good source of protein. But this mushroom here, you must never eat because it'll give you terrible hallucinations. They're poisonous. And so I'm talking about, I've since lost these videos, which I'm annoyed by, but
should re-record them. Definitely.
Oh, damn.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. And so I was sort of doing this thing where it's like, I'm showing the camera. So this is the good mushroom. This one is the poisonous one. And then I was like, so anyway, what are we going to do now? And I kind of put them in my hands. And then at the end of the scene, I'm like, right, so let's move on. And I'll eat this mushroom. And I pop it in my mouth and I've put the wrong one in my mouth, and I kind of go to the camera. You know, I've eaten it. And I'm like, oh god, I think I ate the wrong mushroom. And then I'm acting like, oh god, all right, it should be okay. And then edit. And then it's like a couple of hours later, and I'm trying to continue doing it, and I'm clearly hallucinating because of this mushroom I've eaten.
Oh my god!
I'm there, and it's all going wrong. And like, I included sound effects and it all went weird, and like, I was all getting freaked out by spiders. Like, oh, there are spiders everywhere and this kind of thing. And at one point I jump into a pond, and so we had this pond, which was more like a sort of a bog at the bottom of the garden, like where all the water drained off the nearby field into like this little muddy thing in the bottom of the garden. So I jump into that. Because I thought, this is going to be hilarious, you know, because I'm losing my mind, I'll jump into the bog and then I'll turn into like this sort of feral animal that's like throwing mud at the camera, and, you know, like I've gone wild, you know. And and I filmed all of this, and I was like really throwing myself into the role like Robert De Niro would or something. And, you know, and I, you know, at one point I've got my shirt off and I'm covered in mud in this thing. And then like, I climb out and I just run across a field and just run off into the distance. Right. And that's the end of the video. and like, you know, I put it up on YouTube and stuff, and there was like a series of them, of these like stupid comedy clips. Like, no one watched them. I don't know, because I don't know how YouTube works, really. Since then, I have uploaded videos that have done quite well, but I mean, it's very hard to know how to make a video go viral.
Yeah.
So, and every now and then, and I was quite proud of them, but also in the back of my head was this feeling of like, no, I don't know if it's funny or if it's really just weird. And one day... Oh God! And I always used to do this. So I was a teacher at the time before being a podcaster, and I had a class of students, and I was teaching them for a week and stuff. And at the end of courses, often I would show them videos, and it would be like, I always thought it would be great, and it would always be pretty awful because they just wouldn't understand it, and I'd feel terrible. And this time I was like, I'm going to show them my comedy video, and that'll be fun because, you know, we'd had some fun in the class, and I thought, yeah, they might find this funny. Yeah. They seem like they're pretty cool students.
Yeah.
So I played them this, and then like there's me like, you know, in a pond covered in mud and then running across a field, and I look over at the class and they're all just looking at it, not laughing, no one's laughing, and you know, clearly like they thought I was this sort of professional English teacher and all this stuff, and then there's me like, you know, throwing mud at a camera. And after like maybe weeks or months later, I was probably in bed trying to sleep, and I remembered, and I was like, oh shit. Oh my God. I showed them that video. Oh God. Why did I do that?
Yeah.
You know,
I see. And so then you ended up deleting them as well.
No, I just, one day I was, I had my hard drive plugged into my computer, and I was leaving to go out, and I didn't realize that the cable was wrapped around my leg, and I stood up and the whole hard drive jumped off the table and slammed on the ground.
No way.
And I lost everything, including all the videos that I'd made and stuff.
But didn't you upload it on YouTube?
Oh, no, I did delete it from YouTube. Yeah, I did.
I see.
Yeah,
I
had deleted it from YouTube, so I didn't have a digital copy online. It was just in the hard drive, and it's now gone forever, which is probably good, really.
Yeah.
Some people liked it, but I don't know. I think it was more crazy and weird than anything else. So, yeah, you know, I also did strange projects before starting the podcast. Yeah. Has the podcast, well, what's the best thing about doing it for you?
Well, it's not always fun. Sometimes it's a struggle as well. I suppose the best thing about doing this is that I've managed to get an audience. Mm. And they always listen to every single episode. It's just very rewarding if you can see those downloads, and you know, it's I guess the knowing when you record, knowing that there is someone listening to this, and also like the platform. I'm basically sort of went for the same style as you in a way that I do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's kind of cool to be able to be so flexible and to record episodes with your friends and students and native speakers, non-native speakers, you name it. Yeah. So it's, I don't know, it's not, it's, I can't, I suppose I can't describe it in just one sentence. What like the one thing that is the coolest about it.
Yeah.
It's just cool to have a podcast, you know?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
And to be recording it for so long as well.
Yeah,
like I wasn't that proud of it when I was first few years into it, mm-hmm. you know. But these days, I kind of, I'm like, yeah, you know, I've come a long way with the podcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes all you need to do is just keep going, and eventually, the fact that you've been doing it for a long time and you've got lots of episodes under your belt, that is reason enough to be proud and to feel good about it. Sometimes confidence. Confidence mm-hmm. is just something that builds over time, isn't it? I guess.
Yeah.
I like the episodes where you actually talk to your students.
That's very interesting. I know you always tell me this.
Yeah. Like you'll meet.
Why is that?
I don't know. I just find it interesting to hear you. There's quite a nice atmosphere when mm-hmm. when it's you and your students, because you get the sense that you can hear there's a good relationship. You know, you've got a good rapport with the student, and that you are, in a sense, I guess you're encouraging the student to talk, and you're listening, mm-hmm. and you're correcting their English a little bit sometimes and things like that. But it's also just, I don't know really, I can't explain it. There's just something quite pleasant about listening to you helping this person, and also discovering the person's story. And
I'm not sure if it exactly follows the syllabus.
No.
And if an inspector came, I might be like fired from my job or something. But yeah.
I don't know. I think you could. I think you could find ways to justify it. But yeah, there are. I mean, you know, yeah. Sometimes you do the recordings during class time, when there are exceptional.
To be honest.
Yeah, when it's exceptional circumstances, right? For example, mm-hmm. the most recent one, there was this girl from Chile, and she
Barbara,
yeah, and. Mm-hmm. I think you had a class lined up, but all the other students were absent that day.
Yeah.
So I guess she seemed to be totally fine with doing the recording.
Yeah.
And I think it was actually very good. Loads of speaking practice for her, and all the things you were talking about were quite interesting. From this, in the sense that you know, you were encouraging her to reflect on her languages and her language learning and her whole, and, you know, yeah.
And it's more than that, look, because then you have people who actually listen to this. So it's like again a case of killing a lot of birds with one stone.
I don't know why I use this expression so much,
but
yeah, a lot of dead birds today.
Sorry about that.
That's
listeners.
Right.
And as well as this, it's actually very cool homework for the student.
Ah.
Because they can listen back to it. They can do a bit of self-correction.
Uh-huh.
And we all know from clever books that if a student is able to correct themselves, then the chances are it's actually a very effective way of realizing your own mistakes and fixing the problems, and it's actually more effective than if the teacher tells you what's wrong with your language. So that's what I think is very cool about it as well.
Has it helped you with your English or with your career?
I am sure it has helped me. Yeah, but it has definitely helped me. I'm not sure what the connection is, but there is definitely some sort of connection. Yeah, there is the connection that because of you, of the Lux English podcast, I started my podcast. And because of that, I found out about Delta and Celta. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It all sort of falls into what's the phrase? Falls into pieces.
Falls into place.
Falls into place. Yes.
Yeah.
So I found out about Celta Delta, and then I started thinking about doing it, and eventually I got round to doing it, and then I also got a job at a summer school in London. So it's off doing the Delta, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to with just my. Ironically, with my most important qualification, with the degree, with the master's degree, I wouldn't be able to teach in England, I think, or anywhere in the world. They just acknowledge Celta and Delta. It's just more recognized than higher education.
Yeah.
So it really helped me get a very interesting job, summer school job, and I went there my second time this summer, and yeah, it's That's definitely really been great for. Now,
yeah,
my career.
Yeah, been really great for your career. Definitely. Yeah. So I need to talk to you about board games.
Mm-hmm.
This is another thing that I feel we have to deal with.
But I can talk about this for hours.
I'm sure you can.
You have to ask the right questions.
Okay. Right. So you are an advocate for using board games in the English language classroom. Is that right?
I suppose I became one.
Yeah. I mean,
it was all natural process, to be honest with you. It didn't happen overnight, but mm-hmm. yeah.
So let's see. And you also like to get together with friends and play board games.
Absolutely.
And you do that.
I also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on.
I was going to say, and you do that like offline. You do that like in your house, right? You have your mates over and you sit around the table, or you do it in other places like that.
Yeah. But, well, mostly in other places. In my house, it only happens. It's only occasionally, really, mm-hmm. you know, usually in summer.
Yeah.
But I also run a board game meetup club.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically is it's sort of a perk that I have at my school, because everybody at my school knows that I'm into board games and I'm crazy about it and whatnot. Uh-huh. So they sort of let me run this club there.
Yeah.
Okay. Where all the students can come and play the board games.
That's cool.
Yep.
And also online.
Yeah. Well, that's because I have been working on my own game. So I'm designing a board game, basically.
Yeah.
And I have discovered a platform which helps me do that. And it's basically a computer game on Steam. I don't know if you're familiar with Steam. It's like a platform where you can play all sorts of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I do know that.
Yeah. And there is a game called Tabletop Simulator.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, imagine a virtual table,
okay.
And so people, like everybody who wants to play, you just join that table, and you play with random people from all around the world,
uh-huh.
And you sit at the table, pick a color, and pick a game you want to play,
okay,
and play the game. So you can have all, there is basically any game you can imagine.
Right.
Ranging from some really basic games like Monopoly, Carcassonne, all the way to very, very complex games like Eldritch Horror or something like that. So all games are there, pretty much.
Okay.
And also, on top of that, people can do their own mods there.
Mm.
So I started doing my game about 3 years ago and kind of caught on. Like, it's a little bit hard to convince people to even take a look at your game, because you're up against games that everybody knows, you know.
Yeah.
So you're like in that chat, you're like, okay, does anybody want to play the game I have created, and what do you say about it? It's really good, you guys want to see it, or what do you say, you know?
Yeah.
How do you convince people to try out your game? But anyway, I somehow managed to make sort of a community out of players who play my game. So it is extremely cool, and it's also cool. It's cool for all sorts of reasons. One of them is that, again, I'm practicing my own English with often native speakers or non-native speakers who reached a very, very high level. For example, there are a lot of Dutch in my community.
Oh, yeah.
And as we know, Dutch are extremely good at English.
Yeah.
So you can imagine C2s you know.
Yes, yes.
Easily.
Yes.
So it's super cool that I get to play this game with a lot of different people, and the idea is that one day I hopefully will be able to launch a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah.
Where I will ask people basically for money if they like the game and want to buy it. But we need to see like how many people would do that first.
You're talking about launching a Kickstarter in order to actually make a hard copy of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Because obviously I have a print and play version at home, but we need the game to be produced. We need to the tokens, dice, and pieces have to be made, right?
Yeah.
And cards.
Yeah.
But also I'm not really good at drawing, or I'm definitely, this is my weakness, I'm not an artist. So it's all just temporary there, but now I have managed to team up with an American guy who is actually helping me out with the game, is drawing all the pictures and doing all the art, so remaining hopeful that it gets published one day.
That's brilliant. Can you tell us anything about the game? Like, what kind of game is it?
It's definitely not for everyone, because it's maybe more complex than it should be. I don't know. It's a social deduction game.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if your listeners or you are familiar with any of these games, but basically there's a famous game called Mafia.
Okay, yeah.
Have you heard about Mafia?
I've heard about it. Some of my listeners, when they have meetups,
mm-hmm.
play this game. You, but also some of the other Lepsters, for example, in Moscow, St. Petersburg, Moscow and St. Petersburg, mm-hmm. I should say, because they obviously are two different places. You should put a word in between to show that it's not just Moscow, St. Petersburg, like this single concept in my head. I think they've played it together as well. So I've heard of it. I've never played it, though. So what's the basic concept there?
So basically, the basic concept is there are some... So at the start of the game, you get a role, and you're either a good guy or a bad guy. And the bad guys have to lie and pretend to be the good guys. Uh-huh. And every night, they kill a good guy. And the good guys are trying to figure out who are the bad guys. And so
even though some of the good guys are the bad guys.
Yes, exactly. So it's like it's a game about lying, bluffing, reading people, and being able to make the right decision. It's really hilarious.
Mm.
But my point is that a lot of games, a lot of modern board games are based actually on this concept.
Mm.
So you've got games like Secret Hitler or The Resistance or One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
Yeah.
I'm not saying my game is like that, but it has some elements of it there, because you can also bluff your own cards. So in my game, essentially, there are 10 characters, and each of these characters has got a unique set of abilities. Mm. And you will start with a hand of characters, and on your turn, you will take actions, which these characters can do. But you can also bluff the characters, so you can take actions off the characters you don't have in your hand.
Okay.
And if someone thinks that you're lying, they can call you out on your bluff. They can challenge you. And if they are right, you lose a character. If they are right, they lose a character. Ooh. And so on.
Ooh.
But that would sound very simple. But I made this more complex because I added like items you can buy, like weapons, shields, magic books, potions. Ooh. And these items help you in the game in a certain way. Also, you can like complete quests. So
nice.
It's complex game, very in depth.
Deep.
Deep. Yeah.
In depth. Yeah. Fine. Bluffing. Felt like maybe we need to just deal with the word bluff, just in case anyone listening, they've heard it a few times and they're like, wait a minute, what is bluff? This is my generic student in my head. But teacher, what is bluff? I am not understand. bluffing, right? It's basically kind of like pretending, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, basically, if we have been recording this podcast and it looks like I'm an English teacher, but I could be bluffing.
Ah. You know?
I could, in fact, be an electrician or a plumber or I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like,
you get the point. Yeah, yeah,
it's like, yeah, I get the point. Yeah, to deceive, to be deceptive, or to deceive someone. Yeah. So to pretend to be something that you're not. And it might be like, it's a very common word. It might be used in even in a game of poker, the card game, where someone is acting like they've got a fantastic hand, but then you think, I think he's bluffing. Like, I think he's just, you know, and you call the person's bluff, meaning, you know, you do something in the game which shows that you think that they're bluffing. Or it could be in like in a negotiation as well, where maybe, you know, in business negotiations, some one of the sides is saying, well, I'm afraid there's nothing we can do here. We can't give you this discount because of X, Y, and Z or whatever it is. And the other side are like, I think they're bluffing. I think that that's not true. I think they're doing that just to try and get the best price from us. So bluffing, all right. So bluffing is something that's involved in these games. What did you call them? What genre of games did you say?
Social deduction games.
Social deduction games.
Social deduction games. You're trying to figure out basically who is lying.
Yeah.
About what card.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so.
Sounds good.
Social deduction game, but I also have some elements of RPG in my game because as you play the game, you sort of level up because you collect experience points for killing other players' characters, seducing them with a princess, and being a ruling king, and things like that, and completing the quests.
Cool.
So it's I have more mechanics in my game. Yeah. Obviously, if any of your listeners, Luke, would like to try out this game, I would be more than happy to teach them the game, and they could play with us. And it's an amazing way to find some friends, to make friends.
Yeah, yeah.
With whom you can talk on a daily basis, really.
How are they going to do this?
Well,
then, Zdenek?
First of all, they need to buy the Tabletop Simulator, which here in Europe it costs $20. But from my Russian-speaking friends, I know that in Russia it should be cheaper.
Right.
Yeah, because it is, for some reason it's cheaper there. Yeah. But often it's also on sale. So you get like 50% discount once in a while, every now and then.
Where do they buy it? On Steam?
On Steam. Yeah. Steam, yeah, very simple. It's not that expensive considering how much you get from it.
Yeah.
It's not just my game we are talking about. It's any single board game you can imagine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Because your listeners are high level students, we know that, like B2, C1, C2.
Yeah.
They will really have a lot of fun speaking to all sorts of people playing games, and they will not struggle in most cases.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. So they'd buy Tabletop Simulator on Steam, and then when they enter Tabletop Simulator, how do they find you? It's Kingdoms of Deceit.
Kingdoms of Deceit. It's in Workshop. Workshop, it's like, how would I describe it? It's like a place where people make their mods, I suppose.
Okay.
And like almost every game has its own workshop.
Yeah.
I don't really know if I'm saying it right, but especially this Tabletop Simulator, because it's kind of built around this idea that people can make their own games, and there are different versions of the same game, and so on.
So, let's say within Tabletop Simulator, there's a portal which is called Workshop. And
Steam, actually. But every single player of Tabletop Simulator will be able to help you out with this as well. The community is very healthy.
Yeah.
You know, the people there are very supportive, actually.
Mm-hmm. So not much trolling going on.
Not as much as you would get in, let's say, games where... I would say that this game is not played as much by teenagers as other games.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, nothing against teenagers, but as we know, they can get a bit...
I don't know, yeah.
They can overreact. And to be fair, sometimes they don't speak English well and so on. So it's actually a good idea for your listeners to get this game, because you will come across, bump into really interesting people here.
Okay. That's brilliant. All right. Well, hey, I think that we're going to have to finish this conversation sooner or later. Maybe sooner, because I'm going to have to go down to the daycare and get my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been really cool to catch up with you again and to finally have you on an episode of Luke's English Podcast. And I guess, I don't know, as a long-term listener to the podcast, how does it feel? to be on Luke's English podcast.
It's like I'm over the moon, of course. It's a dream come true, Luke. It's like how could I describe it? It's definitely a great honor for me to be here and to speak to you like this, and hopefully the listeners won't be disappointed by this episode.
I don't think they will be. Well, hey, it's just really good fun. It's really good to talk to you and to hear about your story and all that stuff. And I just hope that you get success with Kingdoms of Deceit, and that you get that you turn it into a real board game, and that you can actually hold it in your hands one day. You know, all the pieces and the cards and the tokens and stuff.
Yeah.
I really
that
hope
would definitely be another thing on my bucket list. Believe me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay. Well, look. Have a great rest of the day, and you know, speak to you again soon.
You too, Luke. Thanks for having me.
Okay, mate. No problem. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Right, so there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That was Zdeněk from the Czech Republic. And if you'd like to play Zdeněk's game online, then you need to download the Steam platform and then buy Tabletop Simulator. And then in the workshop area, you will find Zdeněk's game, which is called Kingdoms of Deceit, right? I think that's right. But if you would like more information about this, just leave a comment on the page for this episode on my website. I expect that Zdeněk will be able to help you there. Playing online games like Kingdoms of Deceit, which is Zdeněk's game, can be a great idea for your English and for your social life in general, as Zdeněk said. This sort of thing is a great solution to that problem of not being able to get social time in English. You've got the internet, you've got like communities that socialise and play games online, and they're all chatting to each other all the time in English. And, you know, like Zdeněk lives in the Czech Republic, but he spends lots of time speaking English in these communities online. I mean, this is the future, isn't it? It's like we're living in the Matrix now. Although I think it's a bit more fun than the Matrix. I mean, there are more board games. I don't remember any board games in the Matrix. Do you ever remember Neo? Did Keanu Reeves ever play a board game? Of course he didn't. That's ridiculous, isn't it, Luke? Oh, how funny. So check it out. It could result in you making some friends online, having fun, playing some virtual board games, and improving your English in the process. So, as I said, get Steam, then Tabletop Simulator, find Kingdoms of Deceit there. I'm pretty sure that's how you will find it. If you have questions, just leave a comment on the episode page, and I expect Zdeněk will be able to respond. Also, check out Zdeněk's English podcast, which you can find on iTunes and most other podcast platforms. Zdeněk, well, you know how it's spelt, because it's written in the title of this episode, isn't it? So I don't need to spell his name. And just typing Dan, it's not going to work. Ha ha. Okay. He also has a Facebook group which you can join in order to keep in touch with him and his listeners. And it's just called Zdeněk's English Podcast. Now then, you heard me in that conversation there mention those ridiculous videos that I made with my brother before I started Luke's English Podcast. You know the ones filmed in some woodland at the bottom of my parents' garden, in which I'm a survivalist, like a survival expert who gets everything wrong, right? You heard me mention those videos. Now, I did, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, in fact, I did delete and lose almost all of those videos, but I have realized that there is still one that still exists and is still on YouTube. It's just a few minutes long, and you can see it if you like by checking the page for this episode. I watched it again when I remembered, and it did crack me up a bit, to be honest. It made me laugh a bit. Maybe those videos were funnier than I remembered. In the video, you'll see me pretending to be a survival expert and doing various comical pratfalls. A pratfall is when you fall over for sort of comical purposes. And I did a lot of pratfalls in this video, falling into hedges and actually injuring myself quite badly. I had scratches all over my arms and my body, which I had to cover up with long sleeves for a few weeks while I was teaching. And you'll see in the video that I'm wearing an old safari suit from the 1970s that my dad had in the back of his wardrobe, which looks completely ridiculous and is too tight. And at the beginning of the video, you'll see me do a comedy pratfall where I'm apparently sort of like walking out of the forest, beating a path through the forest, and I fall over into the hedge. And that hedge was made of holly and thorns. Holly is like, well, it's like that stuff that you see at Christmas, you know, like those green spiky leaves. It was like holly bushes and thorns. So, and I fell over into that hedge many times because it took so many times to get that introduction right. And you can kind of see in the video that I was clearly quite frustrated at getting it wrong all the time. And my brother kept laughing behind the camera, stuff like that. So there were lots of comedy pratfalls and me making an idiot of myself and injuring myself. Perhaps the funniest bits, in fact, are when you can hear my brother trying not to laugh behind the camera. You kind of hear him sort of cracking up a little bit behind the camera sometimes. Those are probably the funniest bits. So the remaining video, this is the least embarrassing video, I think, which is probably why I didn't delete it. Probably the most embarrassing thing about the video is my haircut, to be honest. Unfortunately, the footage of me jumping into a pond, being attacked by imaginary spiders and smearing myself in mud is lost forever. Unfortunately. Actually, it's probably for the best. But anyway, check out the video on the page for the episode if you like. The video is called How Not to Light a Fire. Okay, then that's pretty much it for this episode. Thanks again to Zdenek for being on the podcast. All that remains to be done is for me to remind you to check out my premium service at teacherluke.co.uk/premium for regular episodes in which I focus on teaching you vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation. Join the mailing list on my website to get an email in your inbox whenever I publish content on the website. And also follow me on Twitter, which is where I'm most active on social media these days. My Twitter handle is @EnglishPodcast. And that's it then. Have a great morning, afternoon, evening, or night. And I'll speak to you again in another episode very soon. But for now, goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.